Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests on. In the first half, we're going to have Kathleen Trottier, and she's going to be talking about your fittest future self. And in the second half, we have Dr. Cass Ingram, and he's going to be talking about wild oregano and the hemp oil miracle. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
The immunotherapy drug Keytruda might offer a new treatment option to women with an aggressive form of breast cancer, a clinical trial suggests. The study found that for women with triple-negative breast cancer, adding Keytruda to standard chemotherapy improved their odds of responding, and in the months afterward, women treated with the drug were less likely to see their cancer come back. The findings are encouraging in a disease that is challenging to treat, said Dr. Skip Burris, president of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. Burris, who was not involved in the trial, said he thinks these results will be greeted enthusiastically by doctors and patients. The new trial, published February 27th in the New England Journal of Medicine, was funded by drug maker Merck. Countering a U.S. government advisory, a new study suggests that adults may not need regular booster shots for tetanus and diphtheria if they received a complete vaccination series as children. Researchers compared data gathered from millions of people in 31 countries in North America and Europe between 2001 and 2016. They found no significant differences in rates of the two diseases between countries that require adults to receive booster shots and those that don't. However, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention still recommends that all adults receive booster shots every 10 years. The new findings mesh with the World Health Organization's recent recommendation to only vaccinate adults for tetanus and diphtheria if they didn't have a full series of shots as children. The study was published February 25th in the journal Clinical Infectious Diseases. Piling on extra pounds speeds up the decline of lung function in older adults, a new study suggests. While lung function decreases naturally as people age, researchers link moderate or significant weight gain to an even sharper decline. The study included 3,700 people in Europe and Australia who were recruited between the ages of 20 and 44 and followed for 20 years. Whether they started out with healthy weight or were overweight or obese, people who gained weight during the study period all had accelerated lung function decline, the investigators found. The study was published February 25th in the journal Thorax. Anywhere from 4 to 10% of adults have troublesome chronic cough, defined as an unexplained cough lasting more than 8 weeks, but a new drug may offer some long-sought relief. Reporting February 25th in The Lancet Respiratory Medicine, British researchers said the experimental drug, called gefapixant, blocks a cellular receptor that's key to the cough reflex. Study leader Jackie Smith, a professor at the University of Manchester in England, said many patients with a chronic cough are driven to seek treatment because of the significant negative impact it can have on their quality of life, but at the moment, physicians are unable to help. In a journal news release, she said this is the first study to report a treatment that is safe and effective over the longer term. She added that phase 3 trials are already underway with an even larger group of people and over a longer time frame.
We have Kathleen Trottier with us today, and this is from a previous interview, so she's here with us now. We have Kathleen Trottier pre-recorded with the fittest future self. Here she is. Now, your book that you've just written is Your Future Fittest Self? Is that what it's called?
Absolutely, and it's all about making choices today that's going to create the fitter future you. And also just how to connect the dots between wishing for a healthier, happier, fitter you and actually creating that fitter future you. And I think that a lot of people have these grand health wishes and, you know, they're like, okay, tomorrow I'll do it or the next week. And most of the time it's because they're waiting for that perfect day or that perfect week to get started. And one of the main takeaways of the book is there's no perfect week. There's no perfect day. There's always going to be reasons not to be more active. So you just have to start now. And if today is not the perfect day, but you still get a little bit more walking in than you would have otherwise, that's great. You know, but perfection is a very unrealistic goal. And when you strive for it, that you set yourself up for failure. And I'm all about setting yourself up for success.
Wonderful. And what do you mean by this individualized health mix that you have in your book?
Yeah, so I think another thing that I like to get across to people is that often people try to find the perfect program, right? They go to the bookstore, or they go online, and it's like, what's the best, most perfect program? It's keto, it's your CrossFit, it's running. And, you know, what I always say to people is there's pros and cons to every program. And the trick is instead of trying to find something that's most perfect, you try to find and create something that works for you. You find your fit. Because you know, the benefits of the quote-unquote best workout are moot if you can't actually make yourself do it or you injure yourself while you're doing it. So I like to use my parents as an example when I talk about this, about finding your fit and sort of thriving in your own lane. My mom loves to garden. She loves to walk. She loves to do yoga. My dad loves to play hockey. If I said to my mom, you know, the only way you're going to be fit is if you play hockey 4 days a week, she'd look at me like I was crazy, and then she'd be like, well, I'd rather just not be fit. And if I said to my dad, like, you know, the way you're going to have to be fit is to go for meditative walks with the dog, again, he'd look at me like, why, are you insane? So they have found something that works for them under the mindset that being active is a non-negotiable, but how you get that activity is up to you. So the first book, so I have two books, and the first book is Finding Your Fit, and it's really about figuring out which fitness personality or physique, and then creating a program based on that personality. Mm-hmm. So I have four personalities. So the gym bunny, the home bunny, the busy multitasker, and the competitive bunny. So that's the, you know, if you love to go to the gym, then do that. If you are really competitive, join CrossFit. You know, if you like to work out at home, do that. As long as you understand that being active is a non-negotiable, how you define that activity is really up to you and your goals and your individual version of fit.
And in your mixed concept, it's more than one activity to keep fit and to keep you at it all the time.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, great question. Yeah, so the second book sort of takes that concept of finding your fit and creates a more detailed program. So it's not just kind of do what works for you. It's here are the components that have to be in a workout mix. So there's three mixes. There's the workout mix, the nutrition mix, and the mindset mix. So the book goes through, you know, all of the different workouts available, and it says, okay, so here are the pros and cons of each workout. And then it goes through, you know, 20 different diets. Here are the pros and cons of each diet. And then it goes through a bunch of different mindset modalities, like meditation and self-talk. And then, again, pros and cons. And then your job as the reader is to curate a mix that works for you based on your individual pros and cons. But I give you some guidelines. So I say, you know, every workout mix has to have a cardiovascular activity, and then I explain what that is. And I say every workout mix has to have a strength component, and I define what that is and how you can get it. Every mix has to have a flexibility stretching component. So you know how you're trying to build the mix, and then you create the elements of that works for you. So again, you know, I'll use my mom as an example. I brought her to a spin class one time because I was teaching it, and she got off the bike and at the end of the class, and she looked at me and she goes, Kathleen, I love you more than anything on earth, and I would literally do anything for you except that if you ever try to make me do that spin class again, like, I'll disown you. So right? So spin is one option for cardio, but if you hate it, that's not the option that you should do, right? And so that's sort of the ethos of the book is that exercise should be empowering and invigorating, and it should be tailored to you, and it should be something that, you know, you might not love every single workout, but you shouldn't, you know, hate it. It shouldn't be something you dread. It should be tailored to your version of fit and your goals. You know, so if you're training for a marathon, then your fit is going to be different than if your goal is to just be able to get down and off the ground with your grandkids, right? And no one version of fit is better than the other, as long as you're, you know, embracing that movement is a non-negotiable.
Absolutely. Are there any combinations of workout that mixed together that just wouldn't work, or is everything flow together as far as workouts?
I really like that question. I think it's, you know, partly you sort of have to start with what's your A priority. And what that means is, for example, for me, I absolutely love running. That's my, like, absolute bliss. But running is hard on the body. So I know that for me to be able to run injury-free, I have other things that I have to make myself do. So I wouldn't, since I run, which is high impact, I then wouldn't cross train with another high impact activity. I tend to cross train with biking or swimming because I also do triathlon. But I also, because I love to run, I make myself do strength training, and which I don't hate strength training, but I don't love it. Like I love to run. But I say to myself, my self-talk is, you know, Kathleen, if you want to run injury-free, you have to be able to support yourself on one leg. You need to be able to do balance training. You know, when you run, every time your foot hits the ground, it's about six times your body weight that your kinetic chain has to dissipate those forces. So it's hard. So, and again, that's how I make myself stretch. Like, I don't love doing yoga. It's almost like the least favorite thing, but I make myself do some yoga or some stretching because I'm like, you know, Kathleen, if you want to run, you can't be hobbling all around. So I think it's not that everything flows together, but it is that there is, you know, there is balance in everything. And you have to sort of read the book and know yourself and know, you know, how much stress your body can use. So in the book, I walk you through different questions you might ask, like, you know, when in the past have you been the most fit? When in the past have you been injured? When in the past have you been the least fit? And then I try to help readers do the things that they've enjoyed in the past and not do the things that sort of injured them in the past, and pinpoint where their individual triggers are and how to set themselves up for success. So, you know, I was listening to the intro for the show and you were saying that the second half you were talking to somebody about morning routines. And I love the fact that my interview comes before the doctor's interview on morning routines, because so much of my book is creating systems that sort of save yourself from your future self. And for a lot of people, a morning routine is that. Like, if they can get their morning routine down, you know, they kind of win the morning, win the day. And that can be a system that really allows them to be like, okay, I've done my workout, I feel really good, so that way I'm not going to eat crap throughout the day. You know, I'm going to get to bed at a really good time because I know I have to work out in the morning. And it's sort of a positive domino effect.
Right. Kathleen, you mentioned the concept of the nutrition mix as well. What is the foundation of a healthy nutrition mix?
Well, again, you know, one of the things I love about the book is that it allows you to sort of tailor your triggers and your needs, and then pick the diets or the program that works for you. So in general, I like to promote awareness and a priority on healthy, real food with ingredients that you can pronounce. Like, you know, broccoli, the ingredient is broccoli. Egg, the ingredient is eggs. And lots of water. And just listening to your body. Like, are you stopping when you're full? Are you eating when you're hungry? Are you eating because you're sad? Are you eating because you're angry? And then when you do those emotional eatings, like, noting that. So one of the things I try to stress in the nutrition mix is that no matter what program you pick, those pillars of health have to be there. Like, you have to learn to listen to your body, and you have to learn to stop when you're full. Because no matter what program you're doing, it doesn't work if you're doing that. Like, you know, if you're on Weight Watchers, for example, like, yeah, there's free foods like vegetables, right? But if you've already eaten to fullness and you're kind of stuffed, no matter what, like, eating a pound of extra carrots is not going to be good for you, right? Even if it's quote-unquote free. So navigating any nutritional creation of a mix really also requires knowing yourself. So another example would be intermittent fasting, right? So a lot of people are on that bandwagon. And so I would say, well, one of the benefits of it is that you have a window where you can't eat food. And so if you're somebody where your biggest negative bang for your buck is that you eat tons of calories, you know, after dinner, then something like an intermittent fast where you do like a 12 by 12 where you don't eat between 8 and 8, or you do a 18-6 intermittent fast where you don't eat until noon, but you also stop eating at 8 o'clock at night, that might be really good for you, not because intermittent fasting is in and itself the best diet, but because your biggest downfall is eating, you know, between 9 and midnight, which a lot of people do. They eat really well during the day, and then they eat too much after dinner. So right, that kind of close the kitchen aspect of that diet might really work for you. But if you're somebody who never eats after 8 o'clock, then doing an intermittent fast might not help you lose or get any healthier at all. Like, if you're somebody who overeats at lunchtime, you know, you go out for big meals with your firm or with your office, then something like an intermittent fast won't be helpful. So you kind of have to know who you are, what you like to do, where you make the biggest sort of mistakes, So if you're somebody who eats a lot of sugar, maybe the only thing you need to do is just say, you know what, I'm not going to eat any foods, you know, that are processed and high in sugar.
Right. Kathleen, we're going to have to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about this. Okay.